Hello and welcome to Anatomy of Us, a show dedicated to bringing real help to real couples. I'm your host, Melanie Studley.
What's up, guys? My name is Seth Studley. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and together we are high-performance marriage coaches.
We are cutting through the bullcrap and creating a movement of happy, healthy, badass couples all over the world.
Let's go!
I am so excited to have you on the show, Dana K. White. I just recently discovered you on Mel Robbins. I was up late looking at cleaning things, and I think you were just like a recommended episode, like one of your YouTube videos. And I sat there watching this whole thing, like, how have I not seen you or heard of you until today? Because you've been doing what you've been doing for so long. So tell people who you are and what you do.
So I'm Dana K. White. I always put the K in there because Dana White is a man who runs the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and that's not me. And so it can be kind of confusing sometimes if you just Google Dana White. But I started this almost 14 years ago, which is bananas, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that was the early days of this internet world that we live in. So I actually started writing on a blog because my house was a disaster, but I wanted to be a writer. And so I didn't want to write about my house at all. Like, that was the last thing I would have ever written about. But I thought it was a practice blog. I thought, okay, I will get my house under control and write about it and get to learn about blogging. Because I had found out what blogging was and then waited like a year and a half before I started because I was like, no, I'm going to get my house under control first. And I just couldn't do it. So I started anonymously, just writing about what I was doing, what I wasn't, or what I was resisting doing, what was working, what was not working, and found out that there are a lot of people in this world who struggle the way that I do and did, really. And I always thought I was the only one. You know, it was one of those things where it wasn't my deep, dark secret. It was anonymous. I was not telling anybody that I was doing this. I didn't even tell my husband that I was doing this. Because it was, I was sure I was going to fail. This was my thing that I was most embarrassed about in my life. And so to find out there were other people who not only related to it, but were learning from what I was sharing, which for 2 years, I was like, don't learn from me. Like, who in the world would learn anything about your home from me? And so it was really kind of an identity crisis for me to get to this point where I realized, oh, I have something of value to share. Yeah. Like, I only got there because people were saying, I am following what you're doing and it's working for me too. And so at that point, you know, I had been a teacher, so I shifted into teacher mode, was still sharing my own journey, my own struggles, but it, you know, started putting it into an actual process to teach other people how to declutter in their homes, no matter how overwhelmed they were and how many times they had tried before and not been successful, because that had been my own story.
Yeah, that's so amazing. And has the name of your, was the name of your blog A Slob Comes Clean? Is that how it started? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so fun. I just love that name so much. I grabbed my phone because I put all my notes in here. And it was funny because I'm like, oh, I just keep adding more and more and more notes of things I want to talk about. But what I love about what you do specifically is that it reminds me a lot of, like, on our show, we talk about marriage because our marriage was really terrible. And we did it to, like, help. It was kind of like our own process, kind of like how you started. Like, I'm just starting and sharing this, and this is what I'm going through. And maybe I'm the only one, but maybe I'm not. And then when people started saying, hey, I'm learning from you, I'm like, wait, don't learn from us, because we really messed this up first. But then it has given me so much, I don't know, there's so much to be said for someone who's actually walked through the hard thing and then is telling you how to fix it on the other side versus someone who's like, oh, I studied cleaning. Like, well, cool, but is your house messy? Like, did you have to, like, come to blows with cleaning, or did you just study it? You know what I mean?
Well, that's one of the things I talk about is, I'm like, I feel like a lot of people who talk about this, first of all, they talk about it because they like it. Well, that's a very different starting place than me, you know? I'm like, oh, I don't like this stuff. And so that is its own thing to get over, you know? But also, a lot of times, especially in the world of coming up with more and more content, there's a lot of theory going on. You know, like, there's a lot of, I'm going to teach this because this is what should work if we logically, you know, lay it out, where I am an intelligent person, which is part of the reason why this was such a frustration to me. Yeah. Is I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, I can do other things and I can't seem to do this. That's supposed to be easy, mm-hmm. you know? And so I could overthink. I've got my chronic overthinker t-shirt on today, you know? But I could overthink and like lay out, this should happen and this should happen and this should happen. And then in real life, that's not how it played out.
Yeah.
And so what I was doing is I was writing about what I was doing and what was and wasn't working. Was I was going from theory to actual reality of how does this play out? Not just, not just like to teach it, because I wasn't teaching it in the mm-hmm. beginning, but like for me mm-hmm. and my brain, why is it that the things people say should work doesn't seem to work for me?
Mm-hmm. And I love it. Even in the intro of your podcast, like, I don't know if it's a pre-recorded intro, but you say something like doing like helping people tidy up in the real world. You use that language. And I just was like, I love that so much because when I listened to, again, when I first saw you on Mel Robbins, and then I binged like a ton of episodes, and the everything from like the whole thing with, you know, oh, I have 900 million crayons. I think I should get nine bins for the 900 million crayons versus maybe get rid of, you know, almost all of those right. crayons and just keep some. Like, I struggled with that. And this was more so when my kids were littler. They're teenagers now, and I have two teenage boys and an 11-year-old daughter. But when, especially when you're in that young kid phase, and then you see, I mean, man, Instagram hardly existed back then. I can't imagine how moms must feel now when they're like, color-coded fridge drawer. Like, color-coded fridge drawer? No. No, that's yeah. too hard. That's not real life.
And it's, the distance is too far. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at that, you can look at that and think, I love it. Uh-huh. Like, I do. I mean, it's very lovely to mm-hmm. look at. And do I dream that that's what mine look like? Of course. But when I'm looking at that and thinking that that's my goal, and then I'm looking at my reality, mm-hmm. that distance is like, there's no way to get from here where I am to there. And so it's just defeating before I even start.
Yeah. I love the way you reframe everything again. I've just been listening. Like, I listen every morning, and the way that you, it is pretty clear that you're an educator and that you think in a way that is helpful. Like, it helps people so much more just to get some of your concepts. And so, like I said, I have tons of notes, but some of the ones that have stood out to me, well, the first one I want to mention is, what was it? TPAD, time passage awareness disorder. That cracked me up. I heard that one this morning and I was like, oh, I need to ask you about that one. So tell, like, how on earth did you come up with TPAD? Tell people what it is and why it impacts exactly what we're talking about.
Well, so I just have a habit of naming everything my own names, you know, and it's funny because, you know, I'll always capitalize. I'm like, no, this is a thing.
Yeah.
Like, this is a proper noun, time passage awareness disorder. And it's me describing like a lot of my different issues, you know, like, I'm not going to start this because I think it's going to take forever. And then I actually do it and it took 3 minutes, mm-hmm. or I get into something and I have no concept of how long I've been, you know, so all these different things. And so I just kept saying that. And somebody in the comments, that was the beauty of blogging back in the day, right? Somebody in the comments was like, oh, and they just abbreviated it TPAD. And so it turned into this thing that we all talk about. We're like, oh, we have TPAD. It's a thing, which it's funny because now I'll have people say, oh, this really is a specific time blindness, I think mm-hmm. is what maybe, or mm-hmm. some, there's other, you know, words for it that people will say. And I'm like, because I always am like, I just made it up. I mean, I'm just saying, and yet it's real because there's so many other people who experience it as well.
Yeah. I love it when you were talking about it. Cause it's, oh man, there's like so many things I want to say, but that one specifically, like this, where you're unable to calculate, like, will this take me? Oh, I bet that this project will take me 4 hours when in reality it would take you like 20 minutes maybe. And then the flip side of that, like, oh, this will take me 20 minutes when really it's like a 2-day project. And even that's another one. You said in a different episode, treating your house like a project versus a constant thing to work on. And I can't remember exactly how you said it, but you were like, I used to think of it like a project. And so I would love to just hear more about even that idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about like one of the reasons I was so confused about why do I have this issue when this seems to be easy for the rest of the entire world, especially women. You know, I mean, like a lot of women just kind of give us off this air like, this is what it is to be a woman, is to have a beautiful space. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, why is this not happening for me? And so As I got started, I'm sorry, my brain's going. The fly. It's the fly. the fly that keeps biting me. Anyway, I'm very distractible. It's part of my thing.
Girl, no, same. But
right. So basically when I got started, I was so completely overwhelmed. I had tried methods and all these different things, you know, and would fizzle every mm-hmm. single time, right? And so I felt so hopeless. And I actually started in a hurry. Like I just had this idea and I was like, I'm going to do this immediately. Mm-hmm. So I started writing on this blog and I was like, listen to nobody who was listening at the time, of course. I was like, I don't even know what to do. Like I had lost all confidence that I could figure this out because I'd tried so many times to tackle this problem mm-hmm. and I'd failed so many times. And so I just went, I don't know what to do, but I do know that every time I try to get my house under control, I spend a bunch of time in the kitchen and I recover my kitchen. And then I never get to the rest of the house because I'm exhausted by the time I'm done with the kitchen. And so I'm just going to get my dishes done. I'm just going to just do them. I'm not going to be like at a certain time. I'm just going to try to keep them done because I know that other people whose houses are under control, I can knock on their door in the middle of a random day and they don't have dishes all over their mm-hmm. counter. And so I was like, there has to be a way to do this. I don't know how to do it. And so I just tackled it. And so I started tackling these daily tasks. Mm-hmm. Now, decluttering was really important in all of this, and I was doing it as I went. But those daily tasks changed my house. Mm. Like, I could not believe the impact of these daily things. But I had always thought of them as maintenance mm-hmm. tasks, because that's the way a lot of people refer to it. And it didn't make any sense to me to maintain what my house looked like because it was such a disaster. I was right. like, well, that is dumb, right? Like, I'm not going to do that. And so I always thought I need to, logic tells me, theory again, that I need to get my house perfect, clean from top to bottom, and right. then I'll maintain. That's the only thing that makes sense.
Right.
When in reality, my house actually changed when I just went ahead and started with the maintaining mm-hmm. type tasks, mm-hmm. okay? And when I did that, I realized, oh, I've been tackling my house the same way that I tackle other things where I am successful. And that's the reason, mm-hmm. because I was a theater arts teacher. And so I can put on a play. You know, there's a lot of people can't put on a play. I can put on a play, you know, like I will. And people who are in my plays, they thought I was super duper organized, right? I mean, until they saw my office, but you know, like I was, because I'm like, everybody knew where to be and I had it all planned out and then I executed it and then I was done and I stepped away and I was like, oh, job well done. And so I'm like, I just need to apply that same strategy mindset to my house. And it didn't work because the problem was I would think I was done mm-hmm. after exhausting mm-hmm. myself. And then not do anything for a couple days. And it was back to being what it was yeah. before or worse. Or especially as I started to have children, which my kids are teenagers and adults mm-hmm. now. But as I started to have kids, it got even worse because I didn't have the time or energy yep. to set aside an entire weekend to get my house under control. So I just kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off because I just don't have time to do what I thought it meant to clean my house, which was this huge, massive overhaul mm-hmm. that was never maintainable anyway to me. And so it's like that mindset was doing more harm than good. And so I try to make sure I teach that in a way to let people know that that is your gift. Like if you have a project brain, it's a gift. Mm-hmm. The world needs people with project brains. We do big things, right? Like we do exciting, fun stuff. But if we try to apply that to our homes, mm-hmm. that's part of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That just really hit me. And then you said something as you were saying that, I remember you talking about in an episode, you used a term that was so fun and it was in the kitchen. Like if your cabinet is too full, and you were like, is it findable? Is it like grabbable? What's the, you use it a lot. And I just couldn't remember what it was.
It might be get to-able.
Yes. Get to-able. Yes. It was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cause different words come out of my mouth at different times.
Yeah. I just loved it. Like you were like, is it, do I need it? Is it get to-able? And I really resonated with that language. And again, a little bit of like my background when our kids were little, you want to do what everyone else is doing and everyone else, or, you know, everyone else is like the people on TLC home shows, you know, they're color coordinating everything and everything's got a place. And in real life, I had two boys that were practically twins. They were 15 months apart. tearing everything apart. And I'm like, well, this is exhausting and I can never get in front of it. And I think out of just sheer exhaustion, I was like, listen, I'm going to keep the crayons that are not broken and I'm going to put them in a stupid jar that I don't have to go buy. And I'm going to put them where the kids can't reach them. And look, I think you'll love this. I actually used to put like IKEA, like big IKEA shelving, like at my head height with bins on it, for that was their dresser. They couldn't reach it because I was like, I am so sick of cleaning up these children's clothes and they're too little to get them on their own. So I'm doing bins on a shelf above their head and I will never ever have to worry about, you know, clothes strewn all over the world again. And I don't know, there's just so much to say.
They learned to climb it.
I know. Oh, and they did. They moved the bunk bed. That was like, man, my kids.
But it is though. You do what you have to do for your phase. I call it your clutter threshold.
Yes.
Like you, and it's not what you prefer. It's mm-hmm. not what you like aesthetically. It's literally what can you handle?
Yep.
Like yeah. what can you personally handle? It's different from what your mom can handle, mm-hmm. which is a lot of times the problem is I'm like, but my mom could do this. I should have this in my house too.
Yeah.
And in reality, I can't handle what she can handle. And it changes with phases of life. So for you at that age, you did mm-hmm. exactly what you should do, which is like, I'm going to do what I have to do to be able to handle
yeah.
the stuff.
I want to talk about the mom part of that for a hot second, because that's so true. Mm-hmm. Like my mom and my sister live down the road. They're like 8 minutes away. Their homes look, I'm not exaggerating, like a Better Homes and Garden cover. My house has never looked that way because I don't care. But for a very long time, I was like, I should have like lilac flower beds and baby's breath. And I should also have grasses with ornate shades. And I should have these, like, I was trying to do that because it actually, I felt like I was disappointing them. I felt like I was disappointing them, but they don't care what I, you know, what grasses I have in my yard. But it's interesting that you say that. So I would love to know, like, how much of family of origin have you seen in like people you work with and just doing this for so long? Like, what is the impact of like just what you get kind of handed down or what you think your family expects of you?
Well, I think that there's a lot there.
Yeah.
And it comes from so many different angles for so many different families. So I'll share my own story. And this is actually how I realized clutter threshold is a thing yeah. and named it. And that is that my mom loves to be prepared. You know, she has that mindset where if I find it now and I might need it in the future, I should go ahead and have it so that I, you know, because it would be wasteful. And she would probably have said, if I had said this at the time, oh, no, that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. But what I took from that was that it was almost like a moral issue.
Yeah.
You know, like that I should have all of these things. Like it is wasteful for me to not go ahead and yeah. bring this in my home when it's free mm-hmm. or cheap mm-hmm. or available or whatever. Mm-hmm. To be prepared. And part of that, she grew up on a farm 30 minutes from town. They couldn't run in for whatever they needed, you know? And so I had that mentality and I thought that was the right mentality to have. And I'm her daughter. Mm-hmm. So I love that, you know, like I love bargains. That was part of my personality. And yet as I decluttered after hitting rock bottom and being so frustrated with my house and started getting stuff out, I hit a point when I just looked around and said, oh, I can do this. Like, I can handle this amount of stuff. And I realized that I had been bringing stuff into my house, but I couldn't handle it. So I thought I needed to have these things. And even though they were good things, mm-hmm. valuable things, things that I might truly use someday, it was making it impossible to live in our house. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like we couldn't function. I couldn't find things. I couldn't remember what I had. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get to it. It wasn't get-to-able, you yeah. know, because it was in piles in places and shoved in places because I thought I was supposed to have this. And I just went, okay, I'm different. Mm-hmm. I'm my own person. I can't handle it. And that self-acceptance and saying, I am going to keep decluttering until I hit what I can handle, and that is okay for me to not be able to handle what my mom can handle, mm-hmm. then that is what actually changed my home. And, you know, with my friend, it could be like you're talking about with your mom and your sister, you know, the decorating and stuff. I have a friend who has helped me decorate, and she makes the cutest little vignettes. Like, she gets all these cute little things, and they're all put together. And I'm like, oh, I love the way it looks in her house. And when she helped me, I had to say, just so you know, I can't do that.
Right.
Because I don't notice. I call it, And I hesitate to say this because sometimes people get offended because they think I'm saying it for them. I'm only saying it for myself, but I call it slob vision. Like, you know, my blog is called The Slob Comes Clean. I don't see mess happening. I don't see incremental mess. Mm. I see it looks beautiful and I see, oh my word, what happened? Mm. But I don't see how that is occurring. So like with all of the cute little vignettes and stuff, as things get nudged mm-hmm. or knocked over or something else piled with there, I don't see that until all of a sudden it's this mass of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what happened? You know? And so for me, it is easier to not have that stuff.
Yeah.
Because then it can't get out of control. And mm-hmm. so that's that clutter threshold issue, is just accepting I can handle this. I can't handle that.
Yeah. That's so impactful. Just even the term clutter threshold, that was huge to hear. Cause I think when our kids were little, I went on this like minimalist kick where I was like, we're owning nothing. And my husband, now listen to this. My husband's dad is an antique dealer. So like he deals in antiques. Their home is full, but it, you know, like decorated full, where there's like neon signs on the ceiling. There's everywhere. There's stuff everywhere. So my husband has exactly what you're talking about, where he does not ever see incremental like clutter. He only sees, oh, that's perfectly clean. Or wow, every pair of pants I ever own is like on the bathroom counter for some reason. And it's so frustrating. Yes. I think from a marriage perspective of like, oh my gosh, like how, like if I lived alone and didn't have children, which is not what I want, that's not the life I want. So I will say that right out of the gate. I think I would have a super minimalist home because I really do have a very low threshold for clutter. Like when there's a little bit too much, I'm like, I'm throwing something away. Like I get really like, right. But my husband's the complete opposite.
And just to be clear, it's what can I handle as opposed to even what makes me bananas. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, can I, for me, I need to have fewer pairs of pants because, which those of you in England, we're talking about trousers. I always try to be clear, you know, because people are like,
why do you need so many underwear, lady?
Right. But I need to have fewer. I do need to have plenty of, anyway, you know what I mean? But I need to have fewer pairs of trousers so that there's not as many to manage for me. You know what I mean? Like it helps me with my laundry. It helps me mm-hmm. with the putting away. It's easier for me to put it away because I don't think to put it away. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, even when I don't put it away, there's only a few there to be out of control. Mm-hmm. And then it's easy and quick for me to get it back under control. So that's part of my clutter threshold. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that brought up a point that I was curious about as I was listening, because I recently realized that one of my, almost like a strategy for like, oh, I had a really hard day. I know what I should do. I should go to Goodwill when I drop my kid off at the skate park, and I should look for jeans that are on sale. Now, to be fair, we have a really awesome Goodwill where I live. So like you can get really nice stuff and it's super, super cheap. But because of the way I was organizing and like my jeans were going in a drawer and I wouldn't look at them, like I didn't look at them. So I was buying, like I have more pair of jeans than I need, but I was number one, unaware of how many I owned because of how I was storing them. But then number two, it was like a coping mechanism. And again, for some reason, listening to something in one of your episodes, like triggered it for me. I was like, oh, I'm shopping like because it feels like a good thing to get a good deal. Like I'm doing some sort of saintly deed that I'm like, oh, well, I got this on. They were only $9 and then they were half off. So they're, you know, like I like made it this weird thing to get stuff on sale without realizing, oh, this is cluttering up my house. Oh, and I'm not wearing pants I already own that I already bought, because I'm not seeing them. And I will say my house is relatively clean. So I'm saying this to help people realize like that it is like a constant journey, and listening to your show has helped me even get more precise with some of the habits that I was just sort of not, I just hadn't paid enough attention to them. So I don't know. I just love the way that you use clutter threshold, all the different terms. So I want to, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say that the best way to help you in that situation, if you know, because there are people hearing what you're saying, mm-hmm. and they're like, that's me too, but I really love shopping for jeans.
Yep.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. like, but mm-hmm. I'm not willing to give that up. And so I am not going to say give that up. Mm-hmm. What I am going to say is declutter. Mm-hmm. Declutter. And as you get rid of things that you're like, oh, I thought this was a great deal, and yet it's just sat in my drawer.
Yeah.
For the last 2 years mm-hmm. and made it impossible to put all my clothes away. It changes how you feel about those items, which then is going to make your trip to the thrift store mm-hmm. feel different, because you're going to look at things, you're going to see the future clutter.
Yeah.
Like it. So the best way to stop yourself from a shopping habit is not to just push through, but instead to just focus on the decluttering, because mm-hmm. that really does change how you look at things coming into your house. And it's not that you can't do it. Mm-hmm. It's just that if you're going to come in and your house is going to stay under control, then for everything that comes in, something has to leave. It doesn't have to be another pair of jeans, but mm-hmm. something to create the space for it. And when you start to do that, then you start to evaluate things according to, it's not just that this is a good pair of jeans, mm-hmm. but is this good enough to deserve space in my home? And yeah. then that looks different to you.
Yeah. You know, it brought up another really interesting thought. I would be curious if you've heard people do this before. Mm-hmm. I realized what I was doing was I would buy nice clothes and then be like, oh, those are too nice to wear. So I'll buy like dookie clothes, you know, like okay clothes. And I'll just wear those all the time. So I literally have like, and so that was part of my decluttering process this last couple of weeks, was like, I should just wear my nice stuff. Like wear the shirt that, you know, is nice looking versus like the cheapo whatever. Have you heard people do that before?
Yeah. So a lot of that is that getting into those value decisions, mm-hmm. right? Because you're like, wait a minute. What should I do in this situation? All of that. And I think what you said of wearing the ones that you want to wear, that's great. That's actually one of my best strategies for having something not be clutter, is just say, oh, well, I can just use it and then it's not clutter, mm-hmm. right? Like I have to actively use it.
Yeah.
But with the container concept, which you referred to earlier, yeah. which is like viewing your space as a container, as a limit, mm-hmm. just kind of takes a lot of those, but what about this? What about that? How do I feel? All that kind of stuff. What should I be doing? Takes all that out. And it lets me say, this is the space I have to hang up clothes. And if I try to keep more than will fit in here, there is no hope of my house staying under control. It's mm-hmm. not possible. So I'm going to have my favorite ones in there first. And a lot of times that will just saying that is going to identify, oh, I love these things. So I should be wearing it because mm-hmm. they're taking up space in my closet. And these things over here, I don't love as much, but you know what? These clothes I actually wear on a regular basis, they deserve space more. So it changes things, because it lets me say, all of it's valuable, all of it's great. I'm not rejecting anything. I am just acknowledging the reality of my space and letting that make those hard decisions for me.
Yeah, I love that container concept. I think the way that you explained it on like the Mel Robbins show, and you had like, she had like the pins in her, you know, like jars of pens. And that uh-huh. just cracked me up yeah. because it's like, oh man, if I haven't been there, like I should keep them all in broken crayon, still color, and like all of the stuff. And you were like, and you said like the word container has the word contain in it. Like it's meant to be. So speak just a little bit more about like the aha moment that you had around that container concept, like how you even came up with it.
Yeah. I mean, it is a good thing I talked to myself, right? Because I was basically just talking to myself as I was decluttering. And I said the word container, and I was like, oh, a container is a limit. Like I always thought that organized people loved containers because they like to put their things in containers, and that was what made their space different from mine. And so I would try to copy that by buying containers and putting my stuff in it. And I was like, why does this not look the way that theirs looks? I still have all this stuff that didn't even fit in the containers, so I have to go buy more containers. Mm-hmm. And then I would try to put those containers up, and then I wouldn't have enough shelf space. So I was always buying shelves thinking that that was going to solve my problem. You know, I was just sure of it. Like logically, theory, more shelves should solve my problem. But then I didn't have room for more shelves. I mean, my husband, when I can remember a couple of times where I had been out garage selling because I loved going to garage sales. I kind of stopped that with the decluttering, yeah. like we were talking about earlier. But I would come home and I'm like, hey, I got this great shelf. I need you to come with me to go pick it up. And his face, I mean, he's very sweet, but he just would be like, another shelf. Okay. Because we didn't have any room for more shelves, but yeah. it was not registering mm-hmm. that it wasn't the solution to have mm-hmm. more space. So when I realized that a container is meant to serve as a limit, like I give the example of, you know, firefighters work to contain the fire. Mm-hmm. Like they create a boundary and their goal is to keep the fire inside that boundary because that's where they can keep it under control. If it mm-hmm. goes outside the boundary,
yeah.
they cannot control it anymore. And so when I realized containers are meant to serve as limits, I was like, oh, I get it now. Mm-hmm. You know, like I get that there's a limit in every space, every drawer is a container. And that just means that I take out my least favorite things until all I have left are the things that I like the most that are container worthy and that I can, you know, that's gettoably in there, you know, like we were talking about before. It's like, can I access it? Can I use it well? And then I realized my whole house is a container. And that is what shifted everything for me to realize it's not that things aren't good things to have. You know, I mean, because I had just been looking at stuff thinking, that's cool. That's useful. I might use that one day. And so I would bring it in my house because I was like, it's a good thing, right? And yet my house is out of control. And it was like, oh, once I realized that I need to only have what can fit gettoably, usably in my container, then I was like, oh, okay. It doesn't necessarily matter if it's a good thing. It matters if there's a space for it in my home. And if there's not a space for it in my home and I try to keep it, then my house can't be under control. And it also helped me see I can keep anything. I just can't keep everything.
I love it you when know, you I say that. Yeah.
All.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so helpful. It's funny because just the other day I practiced that exact idea of like, I saw a thing. I was like, that is fun. I'm going to tell you what the thing was because it was funny and it was silly. I love seagulls. Like people don't typically love seagulls. I love them. Like out in the Pacific Northwest, when you go to the ocean, that's like the first thing you hear. And my kids know that I love seagulls. We went into Target and in the like the $3 section, there were these little seagulls, like these little funny knit looking seagulls. And my kid, like I stuck them in the cart. Not, I wasn't going to buy them. I do this thing where I put stuff in my cart and like push it around and then put it back. Like that's like part of how I manage. Like I want to just look at this for a while, but I don't want to own it. And I told my kids, I'm like, just take pictures with me of like with them. I think they're funny and I want to show dad and I think he'll laugh and it'll be silly, but I do not want to own these. And part of it was like, I don't want the embarrassment of putting this in the donation bin, knowing number one, they don't serve any function. They're just like little stuffed doll seagulls. Like how weird is that? But also like, and then I'll just have wasted $6 on nothing. So I like future cast. And I know that's a silly example, but I wanted to use a silly example because that's how I typically accumulate things. Like, oh, look at this cute little, I'm looking across over at this like little IKEA plant that's fake. It was a dollar. Those eight things are so easy to accumulate. And I didn't go to IKEA looking for that tiny little fake plant that's a dollar. I went to IKEA to buy anything, right? And so, oh, look, I bought a bunch of stuff. Because I can't imagine, or I wasn't sort of like having that forethought of like, one day I'm going to have to like get rid of this, or I don't even have a place for it right now, you know?
And when you start, as you declutter and you start to realize if I am going to bring this home, I have to have a place for it, for my house to be under control. And then that helps you go, okay, what am I willing to get rid of in order to make a space? You know, my husband and I were just in Massachusetts recently and we were at this restaurant and he was like, he loves coffee mugs. And he was like, oh, I really want this mug. He's like, I'll get rid of one when we get home. You know, I mean, because, but that's not how it used to be because it used to just be, I love mugs. I love mugs and mugs are great souvenirs. And so why don't we get a mug? But then it's now he knows this is where we have to store mugs. And if we start putting mugs on other places, then we don't have room for the plates. And you know, and so it's like, this is our, we have a full shelf devoted to mugs, but he, I mean, he immediately was like, I think I already know which ones I'm ready to get rid of, you know, if I bring this one home, but that changes how you think about things and keeps you from buying 16 mugs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I love, you also talked about the example of having dishes on your counter all the time. And you were like, I used to think it was because I didn't have enough dishes, but then I realized it was because I had too many. And I would love you to just talk about that for a little bit, because I think that that's another thing. I've had friends that they've asked, because I can clean something really well and really fast. So, and my friends know that. So they'll help, I will come and help them do stuff like when they're moving or blah, blah, blah. And I remember telling that to my friend one time. I'm like, you have like 75 mixing bowls. How many things are you mixing at once? Maybe you're mixing two things at once. Maybe you need three bowls. But I would love to know and hear more about just that like snippet of how that happened in your life.
So it really started with the doing the dishes. I mean, like I didn't know what I didn't know. I started doing the dishes every day just because I was like, other people seem to have their dishes done. So I'm going to do them every day. And not that I had ever said, I am not going to do my dishes every day, but I was just like, no, I'm going to keep them done. And when I started doing that, I realized a day's worth of dishes takes like 10, 15 minutes to do. Like it, I did not know that because I always waited until I was out of dishes And then it took hours for me to clean my kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, I thought, well, if I waited 4 days and it took me 5 hours, then it clearly takes 1.25 hours to do the dishes every day. And I don't have time to do that. Like, that was my thought process, right? But when I started doing them every day, I was like, oh yeah, this takes 10 or 15 minutes. I call this dishes math, right? Like this, it does not work mathematically the way that I assumed it would. So that's part of that over-logicalizing and theorizing how things are going to go. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, okay. 1 day's worth of dishes takes 10 or 15 minutes because I don't have to like move things around and all that. Well, once I realized that, then I was really motivated to not get to 2 days worth of dishes, which is an hour.
Yeah.
Like it's not just twice as much time. Mm-hmm. It's an hour because there's all the shifting and everything. And so at that point, I was doing my dishes every single day and I was like, oh, I'm picking the same 5 plates.
Yep.
Every single night. Like those are the ones that we're using. And so I started to trust myself that I could keep my dishes done and that I didn't need all of these. And I started to not have the attachment to all of the dishes because a lot of that attachment was my fear that I was going to run out. Mm-hmm. And instead, when I realized, oh, I'm only using these 5, I got rid of so many dishes. I think I kept maybe 2 sets just so that we'd have another set for when people came over. But that mindset shift was huge. And then the beauty of it was that once I decluttered the dishes, it was easier to keep the dishes under control because I couldn't, like, even if every single plate in our entire house is dirty, it still doesn't even fill up the whole bottom of the dishwasher.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or if I was hand washing, it still would only take me a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. It's not what it used to be, where I used to be able to go longer. Mm-hmm. So I would have more dirty dishes, which made me feel more overwhelmed, which made me estimate even more time that it was going to take, which made me always run out and feel like I needed more. And so it was this vicious cycle that I was living in.
Yeah. It's interesting how that, cause what I found that I would do in the summertime is I would, and I want to ask you if you know if this product exists or not, and if it doesn't, you should make it and sell it to people. Because in the summertime I would literally take, you know, those like Corian? Is that what they're called? Corel. Mm-hmm. Corian is like countertop. Mm-hmm. The Corel, like white dishes is what we have because they're like little and thin. And I would I would just like Sharpie a kid's name on each one. And I would be like, this is your bowl. If I find your bowl in the yard, let me rephrase that. If you have left your bowl in the yard, you will walk your pretty little hiney out there and get it because you put it there and it's your bowl and it's the only thing you're going to eat soup out of. So here it is. And so like in the summer, I was so tired of doing all the dishes, but my answer before that was always get more dishes. And again, I'm thinking of family of origin because my mother, she had her wedding set of dishes. She had regular dishes and a ton because I'm one of 5 so that we have a big family, right? Then she had Christmas dishes and then she would have special serving things. And I was like, oh, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have like 50 sets of silverware and 3 sets of dishes. And so I thought, well, clearly I just need to get a zillion more. But then I was like, I'm done. Like I'm not, one dish for every person.
And it made your life so much easier, right?
So much easier. But everyone thought I was crazy. And my friends would come over and they'd be like, where are all your dishes? And I would always keep extra, but I would put them in a cabinet that was not get to-able. Because I didn't want my kids to just get the dishes out of there if they didn't have a clean dish. And I was like, this serves 2 functions. Like my kids, if their dish is dirty and they want to eat, they can learn how to wash a dish by hand. Look at that. Now they're learning a skill. So it's interesting though, because there was a lot of social pressure to like, stop, don't do that. Like just have all the dishes like everyone else does. But I was like, no, it's really brilliant because your sink, there's never stuff to shift around. Everything actually fits in your sink and then it fits right in the dishwasher. And it's amazing. Yeah. But I don't know. Do
and
they
some
have
people
like
will color code?
Uh-huh. Oh yeah. That's
yeah.
A good
some
idea.
People will color code, just be like, okay, this is this kid's color. Mm-hmm. And that way we know if it's out. But yeah, I mean, even if you can't, you know, one of the things I did early on when I was just kind of trying to hold on when we hit summer and the out of routine time and my kids were little at the time, was I packed up all but, I think it was 8 sets of clothes for them.
Oh,
so that they couldn't like have endless supplies of clothing to change in and out of and get dirty and me get behind. I was like, and that really changed my perspective on clothing. I honestly, when I first started this, I can remember clothing being one of those things where I had the realization that clothing could be clutter. I was like, I didn't realize useful stuff could be clutter. And we've talked about that already, right? Mm-hmm. But like, that was a moment where I had the realization, oh, even though clothing is useful, please wear it, you know, it can be clutter. Like, because I can have too much. Yeah. If it makes my life harder, if it's constantly getting out of control, I have too much of it. And so that was a big shift for me, mm-hmm. and realizing, oh, I can keep the laundry done when we have mm-hmm. only, you know, the bare minimum of clothing.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. It's like a blessing and a curse, but our kids have those IKEA beds with the drawers underneath, and they're awesome beds, mm-hmm. but the drawers are massive. I mean, they're huge. And so my kids are like, why don't I have any clothes? I'm like, you have a lot of, you actually have a lot of clothes in there, but you know, especially my daughter, she's little, so her clothes are small, but it makes them think that there's not stuff in there. And then it gets like lost in it and all of that jazz. And it's just, mm-hmm. I always am. What I do though, is I take cardboard boxes, like from Costco, you know, you go buy bulk, whatever, mm-hmm. and I'll cut them in half and I'll use them as separators in there. Cause I'm so sick of buying, like the Container Store, I do not love. I do not have a crush on expensive containers when everything we own comes in a container. Like, just make it out of cardboard and no one's looking in your drawer
especially
anyway.
Especially these days, like there's so many really cute boxes mm-hmm. that you get in the mail. Like the whole experience yeah. of the unboxing and everything mm-hmm. means that they give you such cute boxes. You can reuse them for all sorts of things.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah. I love it. I love your energy around all of it and like reframing it and helping people feel like really normalizing it. Cause these things that it does feel silly when it's like, why am I really struggling with this that my sister and my mom can do like in their sleep? And I'm like hardly dealing with any of it. I wanted to ask you a couple more questions. You have a thing where you say, where would I look for it first? And that hit me. And again, I keep referencing the Mel Robbins episode because I felt like I was like, they're talking about my brain right now. And I feel stupid, but I also feel seen because I don't remember how it started, but it was this idea of saving jackets in case someone comes over. Right. And oh my gosh, we live in a rainy climate and I have friends that have kids. And so I would be like, oh, I shouldn't get rid of these rain boots. I should put them in my garage so that when, you know, Georgia comes over, you know, once every 7 years, I'll have rain boots for her and just hope she's still this size. But the funny thing is then when you were talking about it, that never happens. She comes over and wears my teenager's kids' boots. Like I don't ever think to go look at the place where I've been keeping these stupid rain boots just for her to use. And so when you said that, like, where would I look for it first thing? And then in relationship to like this weird habit of keeping stuff in case someone's cold when they come to my house, like, what are your thoughts on all of that? Unpack it for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's where my brain goes to. Like my brain immediately goes to all the what ifs and the hero situations. I love being a hero. Like I like to be like, oh, I've got exactly what you need. It's right here. Except that I could never find it when I was keeping everything for that purpose or I never thought about it. So I came up with two decluttering questions that helped me work through anything and everything in my house. And they involve no brain spinning out, you know, like everything else would for me. So they're very fact-based, instinct-based. So the first one is, if I needed this item, where would I look for it first? In that, I am acknowledging my own house and my own habits as opposed to where my grandma would put hers. Like that does not matter because that's why people say, oh, I got organized and now I can't find anything. Mm, like that's not being organized, mm-hmm. right? It's very frustrating and it keeps you from wanting to do it again in mm-hmm. the future. And so it's this idea of, okay, I am going to, you know, ask myself if I needed this, where would I look for it first? I'm only asking this on the stuff that I don't know where mm-hmm. it would go. Like I don't have a home for it. So I'm just saying, you know, if I was looking for my pink headphones, which we could not get to work in this today because of all our issues with tech. If I was looking for that, where would I go first? Even if I had no confidence they were going to be there and I thought I was going to spend the next hour tearing the house apart for it, what's the first drawer that I would open uh-huh. or cabinet that I would open? And that's where it needs to go. And I take it there now, and taking it there now means that I can stop at any time and I've never created a bigger mess while I'm decluttering. Mm-hmm. I don't pull everything out and sort it into piles and do it later. I just go ahead and do it now so I can step away when I'm tired or whatever. But what happens is so many times you know, when you're asking yourself, where would I look first for these size 5 rain boots when the smallest person in your house wears a size 9? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, where would I look first for size 5 rain boots? And your brain goes, well, you know, and so when that happens, then I ask my second question, which is, if I needed size 5 rain boots, would it ever occur to me that I had size 5 rain boots?
Yeah.
And the answer is usually no, because I didn't have a place where I would go looking for it. And that's the reason I wouldn't look for it, is I would never think to, which means she would use the other ones, right? She could slosh around in size 9s. She would, you know, go barefoot and be as happy as she could be. I mean, like all these things that you're like, oh, we would totally just function. Or her mom would run out and buy size 5 rain boots.
Right.
And then 3 months later, I would be decluttering in the garage and find these rain boots. And I would feel horrible that she had gone out and spent that money and wasted all that time. And she probably left them at my house for the next time. You know, so now I've got 2. So it just is this bad cycle. And it's a reality acceptance of if I would never go looking for this, if it would never occur to me to even look for it, it doesn't need to be in my house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know. That's so brilliant. You said something earlier that I think it was around the dishes thing. This, you said you had a fear of like running out, like not having enough dishes. What do you know much about, like, I just haven't heard it on any of your episodes yet, but I'm sure you've talked about it, sort of like the psychology of like, I don't have enough, or I should have all this excess. Like what do you have to say around that, I guess?
Well, so I don't get into the psychology of it because I'm not a psychologist. And also because it's kind of my thing. I just base it on whatever I do and what works for me. And strangely, it seems to work for other people too. I feel like I just need to like get it down to the basics. And so what I have learned about that is what I've learned from experiencing it in my own home is so much of the stuff I was holding on to was because I was fearful that I would need it in the future. Mm-hmm. I was fearful that I would regret getting rid of it if I had to replace it. And so I have had to work through that in my own mind and say, okay, I might regret this. I might have to replace it someday. But if I'm going to replace this item, even if it's $40, you know, which feels like a lot of money, right? In the moment, you're like, even if this is $40 and I have to replace it, am I willing to, I mean, if somebody was to come along and say, give me $40 and that space would be totally usable, clear of clutter, you would enjoy it. What would I say? I'd be like, take my $40 and I'll give you a tip. You know what I mean? Like, because that was how much I wanted. So I had to make a conscious decision to say, I'm going to place that $40 of value on the space being usable. And so I shifted how I thought about that. And then I lived through it. And I had experiences where I did have to go replace something. Mm-hmm. But every time that happens, I realize, oh, this is one time. And there have been probably 60 other times when I didn't have to replace it and it's worth it. Like it's such a small price to pay for this space to be usable. And so it's like, that's how I work through these things in my own situation and what I share rather than giving you all this. Other people can give you the scientific.
No, that's great. I mean, that answer works for me. I had a question that's like real to my life. So our kid, like, how do you manage things again? In my family of origin, my mom, I remember when I got married, my mom gave me this like container of stuff she had been keeping for me, but it was like artwork from when I was in kindergarten. And I was like, no, I just have to throw this away. Like, what am I doing with this? And thankfully it wasn't like a ton, but still it was like, I didn't want this. But where I'm at now is like, we have kids in like Taekwondo and every time they level up, they have a new belt and they have their old Taekwondo suit. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this stuff? Like, what am I? Because, I mean, I seemed like the mean mom who I would take a picture of my kids' art and throw the art away. Like, I'd keep some really cute stuff, but I am not fitting to have a drawer that big of, like, cartoon rainbows or, you know, like, They just make so much stuff in kindergarten. They bring everything home. But like, what would you recommend for people to do with stuff like that? Or how do you, what's the, like the thought process there?
Yeah. So, I mean, your mom did the right thing, right? Like she gave you a small thing and you got, but there's also a lot of people out there whose moms have literally brought a truck.
I know.
I've rented a U-Haul.
Like that. Yes.
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, it happens. And so like your mom did the right thing.
Yeah.
Yes, you were like, are you kidding? I don't want this. And you got rid of it. But it was not debilitating, yes. It doesn't sound like,
no,
you
know, no,
for
no,
you
no.
and your home. So you can do whatever you want to do. But what I recommend is, and this is how I have to think it through, is I say, okay, what space do I have in my home that I can devote to these things that have no real purpose, mm-hmm. but they have memories attached to them, okay? And the best thing to do is involve your child in this process, not in the deciding what the space is, but in the deciding what to keep,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
So you say, okay, this shelf in their closet, I can devote a third of that to this and still have enough room for all the things that they actually need in their real mm-hmm. right now life, right? So here's this space. This is a box that will fit in that space. This is our keepsake box. And then as that's my keepsake box, that's where things go that don't have a purpose and a reason mm-hmm. to be there, but you just want to keep it because it gives them permission to, sure, again, you can keep anything. You can't keep everything though. Mm-hmm. Okay. So once that box is full, that's the limit. And then if another really important thing comes in, then you look at the box and you say, okay, what is not as important as this, mm-hmm. and then you create the space for it. You know, so it's letting that container make those decisions, which I always try to explain. Sometimes I think when this is new to someone and they're thinking, okay, I'm going to start doing this, it can be scary because you think I'm going to fill up the container and then make all these hard decisions. And they're all going to be difficult once the container is full. But in actual reality, when you know that the container is limited mm-hmm. and that it is supposed to hold everything that you're going to keep, every single thing, even from the first thing that you put in there, it looks different to you. Mm. Like everything is like, is this container worthy or not? Where before I might be like, oh, I want to keep all of my kids' Taekwondo belts, mm-hmm. right? Like those are great. Those are momentous in their life. They earned them. They worked for them. I can remember when they, you know, did their thing and got them. And so it's like, okay, those are great. And you think Taekwondo belts should stay. But when you say, well, this is the container, and you're like, oh, well, I don't want to fill up the whole container with Taekwondo belts. So, oh, you know what? This one right there, that was a really, really tough. Is it a fight? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, they do poomsays. It's something I would have never known.
That was a super tough poomsay. Is that right? Is that what you said?
Poomsay? I don't even know.
I hope I didn't just say a bad word. I'm sorry.
We'll edit that one out.
Okay. But like, that was a super tough doolally. Right. I'll just use my word I use all the time. That was a super tough thing that they did. And so that one, I can put that in there. I experience all the feelings, all of the feelings. And it naturally sorts things out and makes it not so emotional. Cause mm-hmm. you're like, all of Taekwondo, every single year was meaningful to me, mm-hmm. but the container is a limit mm-hmm. and I can't keep them all. So now it just helps me go, okay, this one and this one, those were really momentous and they bring back all of my Taekwondo memories.
Yeah.
So
that's beautiful that and right really there, helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry.
No, I had nothing else to say, but I was going to keep talking anyway. That's what I do.
Well, I want to be respectful of your time. And then that reminded me that I don't think I asked you about the 5 steps yet that you do, that you weren't walk with people through. So if you want to share that really quickly, and then we can sort of wrap it up. I could talk. I looked at the clock and was like, I cannot believe like 48 minutes had gone by and it felt like 10. So you're a blast to talk to. But what are your 5 steps and how do they help people?
So to be clear, there's 60,000 words in that book right there. Do you see it? that teach the 5 steps and give you the mindset shifts and like apply the 5 steps to the different areas of your home and working through them with different people in your life and all this. Anyway, but they basically, well, they are Number one is trash. Number two is easy stuff. Anything that has an established home already elsewhere in the house, you just take it there now. Third is duh donations, like things that mm-hmm. I don't even have to ask myself questions about. Then you ask yourself the two decluttering questions that we mentioned earlier. And then finally, you embrace the realities of the space. So at the, by the final step, the only stuff left in there is stuff that you would look for in this space. But if there's more than can fit get to-ably and usably in that space, it's still not functional. Mm-hmm. So you have to remove your least favorites until it is functional. So mm-hmm. that's very briefly the five steps. But to the point of them is to work you through the process without ever making a bigger mess. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're never going to pull everything out. It gives you a process for making final decision, item by item, acting on those decisions so that you don't have to set aside a certain amount of time mm-hmm. to declutter. You can just get started, start throwing away trash, and you've made progress. That shift right there is the thing that changed my home. Mm-hmm. Not trying to think ahead to how long is this going to take? Okay, when am I going to have that much time? Yeah. I don't want to get started when I can't actually finish. You know, my house stayed the same as long as I thought that way. When I said, oh, I'm just going to start on the trash, mm-hmm. then my house started to change. And then you can keep moving through the steps. And they allow you at any point when you get distracted because you have kids or mm-hmm. you're just distractible like me or life happens or your energy is gone. You know, you have energy limitations mm-hmm. or chronic pain or something. And you're like, I'm done. I didn't know how long I had. Mm-hmm. And this is the moment I have to quit. You're only better off. You're never left with all these little piles yeah. of things to do later. So yeah. that's the, I call it the no mess decluttering process.
Yeah. That's so brilliant. Cause that's what I always used to do. Tear everything out. I mean, it's almost mm-hmm. like what you see on TV when they would do, mm-hmm. like they come and declutter a home and they make mm-hmm. massive piles of stuff. And that is a huge project. And unfortunately, before, I would do it when my husband would be at work and he would come home to it. He'd be like, oh, so we're doing this now. And like, yeah, and you have to help. Love.
Which then makes them yeah. resist it in the future, right?
Absolutely. Like
so in his mind, oh, she's going to declutter. That's going to completely mm-hmm. turn our house upside down. Mm-hmm. And then he's not going to be on board.
Yeah, or like steal a weekend. Like, I mean, and I just had mm-hmm. no, because I thought that's what I was supposed to do. You yeah. also said a couple other things too that really, it cracked me up because I found myself not, I was looking for something in the car. And I had just listened to your thing about declutter when you're like looking for something, declutter at the same time versus just shove stuff around to find it. And I was like, I'm not decluttering. I'm just shoving stuff around, but I only have like 2 seconds. Like it was a funny moment, but it was good because I learned the lesson and I know the lesson, but I just laughed. I was like, oh, she wouldn't approve, but like in a fun way, you know what I mean? But I love the idea, especially the duh donations and the trash. That is something I would never put in the category of like tidying up. I just don't think of like, oh yeah, trash is a problem for people. And then donations that are like, oh yeah, I don't need that thing. You know? So I just love the way you break everything down.
Well, and two, with the trash, there are people who are like, oh, I don't have trash. And I'm like, well, yay for you, but you probably do. So like I hear from people all the time who will say, I thought I didn't have trash, but you told me to look for it. And I could not believe how much trash I actually ended up having. Like, cause it's packaging or it's whatever, yeah. like, oh, I've used up all but one pen from this box. Mm-hmm. The box is trash, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's, but the beauty of looking for trash is that it is zero stress. Even if you're confident there's not going to be any, there's no decision to make. You yeah. are literally just saying, is there any trash here? But as you do that, your brain starts to look at individual items and you're not seeing it as a mountain anymore. Mm-hmm. You're seeing it as individual items. And then your brain is adjusting and you're going to be ready for those future steps when you're going to make decisions. Where as long as it's a mountain of stuff, yeah. it's like, oh, it's a big, overwhelming mountain. But
yeah.
looking for trash starts to break that down.
That's fascinating. And I imagine it seeing it in like highlighted colors, almost like, okay, right now we're only looking for trash. And then in your brain, all the trash turns green or something, you know, and then it filters all the other things out because it is yes. so overwhelming. So I don't know. Yeah. I could listen to you all day and talk to you all day, and I will continue to listen to you all the time. And I just am so thankful that we were able to connect and that the bug didn't eat you to bits and pieces and that we got our tech to
it
work.
It has bitten me multiple times. So if people have seen me go like this multiple times, it's because this mean, hateful fly.
What kind of flies do you have in Texas that bite you? I mean, we won't have those here.
I don't even, I'm just telling you, it's...
Not cool, man. Not cool. But I really do. I'm so appreciative of what you do, and it's going to help me so much, and it's going to help our audience so much. So thank you for, number one, talking when no one was listening and continuing to do it for 14 years. You're like the OG blogger YouTuber, which is amazing. And why don't you tell people really quickly where they can find all the things that you want them to find?
So I have a podcast called A Slob Comes Clean. I have a YouTube channel. I think it's Dana K. White. I think if you search A Slob Comes Clean, you'll still find me. I'm at aslobcomesclean.com, and that has links to all of my books. I have 3 books, and everything's based there at aslobcomesclean.com. So
amazing. Thank you again for spending some time with us. And I mean, you're just awesome and you're hilarious. Do you do stand-up comedy? Because you should. If you've never done it, you should do it, because your eyes are like, what you do with your eyes is so funny. I could just watch you all day. It was delightful. But
I need you to say that again and let me record it. And I'm going to tell my children. I'm funny, y'all.
I'll send that to them. I'll edit that clip and just send it to them. But thank you again for all of your time. And everybody, go check Dana K. White out and A Slob Comes Clean. All the things that she does are just amazing. So thank you again and have an amazing day.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Anatomy of Us. This podcast is produced by my mom, Melanie Studley, and hosted by my dad, Seth Studley. Our show is edited and published by our producer, Reba Hansen, from Creative Media Support. Special thanks to our Patreon members that get an extra episode every week. Thanks for watching. Love you. Bye.